Hi, welcome to the Environmental Justice Report here at Progressive News Network. My name is Janine Maloff. I am the producer and host. Well, this week we have a continuation of an earlier report. Now, as you know, last week we talked quite a bit about the ongoing, campaign against environmental justice warriors. We covered how academics and environmental justice campaigners were demanding that the International Criminal Court begin investigating and prosecuting what they call environmental criminals. And make no mistake about it, these corporate entities that are part and parcel of big petroleum, they are environmental criminals. You know, we now know, but per their own admission, you know, big petroleum had to admit it. We now know that the campaigns that big petroleum used to claim that environmental, I won't even call it global climate warming, I'm going to call it global climate devastation, that their product did cause majority of it. We know that big petroleum knew they were poisoning the environment, and we also know that big petroleum lied about it for decades, just like big tobacco lied about the poison of their product for decades. And how did they get away with these lies? They got away with them through using advertising and public relations. So, you know, this week we're going to take a peek at the decades-old disinformation campaign that was sponsored by Big Petroleum, pushing the lie that global warming, and I'm going to call it what it is, global climate devastation, is, you know, overblown, a hoax, a Chicken Little panic. And this campaign has really lulled the public into a false sense of safety and security. And as I said a few seconds ago, just like big tobacco, the petroleum industry should be held, not should be, must be held accountable for the death and destruction they have caused. So that's our big story. Story number two is going to speak to a recent Supreme Court decision. Actually, it was a decision not to hear a case in the case of Doe v. McKesson. So this case, Doe v. McKesson, which was decided in the Fifth Federal Circuit, it went to the Supreme Court on appeal. The Supreme Court refused to hear the case. Now, when the Supreme Court refuses to hear a case, that means the lower court had to say stands. And the lower court's decision from the 5th held that protest organizers can be held liable, both civilly and potentially criminally, for the actions of anyone present at the scene. So, for instance, if this had been true in the time of, say, Dr. King, then basically, you know, they're all walking peacefully across the bridge. It would just take one KKKer or neo-Nazi to do something violent, and the organizers, the student nonviolent protest, Dr. King, they would be actually held liable. All right, and if this sounds insane to you, it should sound insane, because basically this is a blanket punishment for the actions of some. And in our criminal justice and civil justice system, you're held responsible for the actions you commit, not what somebody else does. But apparently, Judge Jennifer Elrod of the Fifth Circuit didn't see it that way. We're going to be discussing that. We have, in terms of our deplorables list and our Jackass of the Week award, we have another twofer, and we will talk about that as well. And, of course, we have the stylings of Randy Rainbow. It's one that has run before, but it's very apropos. All right, so that's what we're doing this week. And let's go on with the show. All right. So story number one, how corporations have pushed lies about the environment and helped destroy the planet. Bottom line. We're going to start. There's a piece. And even though this piece is more than 2 years old, it still holds true. And it's from The Guardian. If you ever get a chance to read articles in The Guardian, please do so. It's good, solid reporting. And this was written by Jeffrey Supran and Naomi Oreskes. The headline is "The Forgotten Oil Ads That Told Us Climate Change Was Nothing." Okay, And this was published in November of 21. It still holds true. And so I'm just reading straight from the article. It says, quote, the 1980s, fossil fuel firms have run ads touting climate denial messages, many of which they'd now like us to forget. And then they produce this visual guide. Okay? So, you know, the article asks, why is meaningful action so difficult to get going to prevent a global catastrophe? You know, why are so many people choosing to believe the lies, and again, in our lies, pushed by big petroleum? You know, why do we see, you know, leaders like Greta Thunberg being arrested and manhandled, her little bitty self? She looks like she weighs, what, 90 pounds sopping wet? Big cops manhandling her because she has the audacity to speak the truth, to speak truth to power. Make no mistake about this. Like slavery before, like big tobacco before, this is big money. All right? This is another instance of the very rich and corporate basically abusing the planet and abusing the rest of us to varying degrees. If this makes a sense, I've had people say, Janine, it sounds like you hate rich people. Well, I wouldn't say I hate rich people. I hate the unearned privilege they receive. I hate the injustice that they push. That's what I hate. Take a little drink of water. So, but according to this article, the fossil fuel industry or big petroleum, whatever you want to call it, they have basically, with premeditation, pushed this multi-decade, multi-billion-dollar disinformation, propaganda, and lobbying campaign. And it's true. And again, this part of this is documented by, I have to wait for this thing to open up for me. The, well, wow, the website was scrubbed. There was a an actual source quoted and linked from the George Mason University Center for Climate Change Communication. I just clicked on it and it says no results found. It says I have to refine my search. Wow, that's something. You know they scrubbed it, I'm sure of it. So anyway, fossil fuel industry wants to delay climate action because God forbid they should miss out on any pennies whatsoever. The fact that we're destroying the planet and their lies can heavily contributed to it, no, can't miss any actual profit. I mean, has it ever occurred to anybody that in the pursuit for profit, the very rich, the billionaire class, and the corporations are basically addicts? That our society is run by addicts and their drug of choice is greed and power? And that they're insane? Just saying. Okay, I'm in a mood today. So, but they want to delay climate action. They want to confuse the public. This is very premeditated. And there was, according to this article, quote, a remarkable array of advertisements with headlines ranging from lies they tell our children to oil pumps life, seeking to convince the public that the climate crisis is not real, not human-made, not serious, and not solvable. The campaign continues to this day, end quote. And it's true. And again, this article was published a little over two years ago. Okay, well, 21, yeah, so almost 3 years ago, but it still holds true. So back in 21, there were six big oil CEOs that were basically subpoenaed and summoned to come to Congress to answer for the industry. Specifically, these six big oil CEOs, quote, were summoned to U.S. Congress to answer for the industry's history of discrediting climate science. Yet they lied under oath about it. In other words, the fossil fuel industry is now misleading the public about its history of misleading the public. End quote. We'll see if this link actually works. It does work. It's another piece by The Guardian where they lied about it. This was a piece written by Chris McGreal in October of 21. And the headline reads, Exxon CEO accused of lying about climate science to congressional panel. Congresswoman Carolyn Maloney likens oil company bosses' responses to those of tobacco industry at historic hearing. So You know, Darren Woods at that time in 21 was the chief executive of ExxonMobil, and he was accused of lying to Congress. He denied that the company covered up its own research. Quote, he denied that the company covered up its own research about oil's contribution to the climate crisis, end quote. This is research that ExxonMobil conducted themselves. But of course, it wasn't what they wanted to get out to the public, so the CEO lied about it. Okay? The chair of, and I'm just reading from the article now, quote, the chair of the House Oversight Committee, Representative Carolyn Maloney, and this was when the Dems were still in charge, pressed Woods about statements by his predecessor, Exxon CEO Lee Raymond, who in the 1990s said the scientific evidence for climate change was inconclusive and that, quote, the case for global warming is far from airtight, end quote. It goes on to say, quote, in 2002, Exxon ran advertisements in the New York Times calling climate science unsettled, end quote. Let's know what is, not only what's unsettled about it, and frankly, I think we need to hold mainstream journalism accountable too. Why in the hell did the New York Times accept those advertisements? Seriously, they shouldn't have. In fact, this is a prime example of why there must be truth in advertising. All right, you want to end misinformation or disinformation? Then fine. Demand truth in advertising, both for political advertisements as well as selling other things. And when they mislead the public and it results in something like this, criminal penalties. That's all. We're done with this. So anyway, Congresswoman Malone, again, this was when the Democrats were still in charge of the House, you know, put it to Woods that, quote, Exxon's own scientists had repeatedly warned the company about the threat from burning fossil fuels as far back as the 1970s. Okay? Maloney went on to say, quote, there is a clear conflict between what Exxon CEO told the public and what Exxon scientists were warning privately for years, end quote. Excuse me. Mr. Woods denied that the former CEO, Mr. Raymond, or that Exxon misled anyone. Mr. Woods went on to say, quote, I do not agree that there was an inconsistency, end quote. Wow. Don't you love it when they really, when a lie sounds as stupid as the dog ate my homework? And this guy gets paid the big bucks. And Maloney responded, Congresswoman Maloney, that, you know, this reminded her of another hearing that they had had with the tobacco industry. To quote Representative Maloney, quote, they said they did not believe that nicotine was addictive. Well, it came out that they lied. Tobacco nicotine was very addictive. And now I'm hearing from you that the science was reported publicly where your executives were denying climate change. We know that your scientists internally were saying that it's a reality. So I was hoping that you would not be like the tobacco industry was and lie about this, end quote. It's that blatant. Excuse me. Now notice, since the Republicans have been in charge of the House, we don't see any of these type of hearings. Instead, we see Marjorie Taylor Greene holding up a picture of Hunter Biden's thumbstick. This is all they've got. Unbelievable. So this article goes on to explain how the heads of the American operations of other oil companies, I mean Shell, Chevron, and BP, quote, also denied they misrepresented climate science or deceived. The article goes on to say, quote, they each said that they recognized global heating was a reality and a major challenge, but the executives did not accept that their companies had failed to take it seriously or that they were undermining attempts to cut greenhouse gases by funding trade groups pouring millions of dollars into lobbying Congress against tighter environmental laws, end quote. Here's a quote from Michael Wirth. This is in 21, who was the CEO of Chevron in 21. Mr. Wirth said the following, quote, we accept the scientific consensus. Climate change is real. Any suggestion that Chevron is engaged in disinformation and to mislead the public on these complex issues is simply wrong, end quote. But Maloney wasn't going to hear any of it. She accused the oil companies of basically keeping the cover-up going, including she accused them of hiding documents. And then she said that she was going to take the step of issuing subpoenas to force the firms to reveal that information. She said, quote, we need to get the bottom of the oil industry's disinformation campaign, and with these subpoenas, we will. So anyway, it goes on to say, quote, the oil and gas industry, which spent about $100 million on political lobbying last year in 2020, in other words, was strongly backed by a number of Republicans on the committee who sought to distract by denouncing Joe Biden's energy policies. Okay? So the highest ranking Republican on this committee back then, guess who? Representative James Comer, I believe it's Tom Hartman refers to him as Comer Pyle. Oh, I love that. Remember Gomer Pyle? Tom Hartman refers to James Comer as Comer Pyle. Shazam! Okay, so apparently James Comer questioned the legitimacy of this investigation. I don't know why he would do that, except he's really that stupid. I mean, how do you question the legitimacy of an investigation whose very purpose is to basically collect the documents that will say one way or another whether these big petroleum companies lied to the public? How is that illegitimate? But he did. And again, Comer Pyle just, you know, rattled off a bunch of crap. In the same hearing, there were several Republican members who really openly questioned whether or not the climate crisis was really a crisis. Representative Clay Higgins called the hearing, quote, a threat from within because the American way of life was built on oil, end quote. This article goes on to say, quote, another Republican member said Maloney owed the oil executives an apology for intruding on their right to free speech by pressing them to make a commitment that their firms will, quote, no longer spend any money either directly or indirectly to oppose efforts to reduce emissions and address climate change. Okay, for the record, this article said none of the executives would make a direct commitment. Now, here's the thing. These Republicans in 21 that claimed that Carolyn Maloney owed the oil executives an apology by intruding on the right to free speech? Nonsense. First Amendment free speech rights says the government cannot interfere with the content of your speech. You know, you can't slander, libel, or defame. But as a representative of the government, yeah, a member of Congress can ask them to make that commitment. She was pressing them. She wasn't demanding. So again, this is nonsense. Then Carolyn Maloney, the Democrat who was head of this, showed the hearing, quote, a video secretly recorded, quote, by Greenpeace earlier this year of an Exxon lobbyist describing the oil giant's backing for a carbon tax as a public relations ploy intended to stall more serious measures to combat the climate crisis. Okay? Seriously. And there's this video secretly recorded by Greenpeace. Let's see if I can find it. I can't find it. Okay. You get the drift here. You know, notice you find so much information here, more information from The Guardian than you do The New York Times. What's the deal here? Okay. So, you know, once again, we have the fact that the oil industry, petroleum, whatever you want to call it, they use the same public relations playbook to deceive the public and just downright lie. And again, they had their own research that, yes, confirmed that their product is causing global climate devastation. Period. Okay? So the hearing also questioned leaders of two powerful lobby groups that were accused of, quote, acting as front organizations for big oil, namely the American Petroleum Institute and the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. Again, the planet belongs to all of us. We have a right to demand answers. Okay. So, yes, they lied. So now, let's look at some of the early days of how to spin this. You know, I'm sorry that I'm coughing. The weather here is crazy. When we talk about spin in the media, spin doctor, spin, public relations, here's the deal. Spin, public relations, not a whole lot different from propaganda, in my opinion. Okay? Propaganda is all about spin. Propaganda is all about conning the public to believe something that isn't necessarily true. I have no use for spin doctors, and I definitely have no use for the public relations profession. The fact that so many journalists or people that have journalism degrees go into public relations is a disgrace. But let's look at spin. So let's go all the way back to 1962. Keep in mind, since the 1970s, these companies had definitive research that they knew their product was basically leading to the destruction of the planet. They knew it. 1962, what we now call ExxonMobil, was called Humble Oil. It says here, quote, Humble Oil, now ExxonMobil, was not self-conscious about the potential environmental impacts of its products in this 1962 advertisement touting, quote, each day Humble supplies enough energy to melt 7 million tons of glacier, end quote. Okay, that is so wrong on so many levels. I'm going to read that again. Quote, each day, and they're bragging about this, each day Humble supplies enough energy to melt 7 million tons of glacier, exclamation point. Humble Oil being what we now call ExxonMobil. The truth behind the ad, according to this, quote, 3 years earlier in 1959, America's oil bosses had been warned that burning fossil fuels could lead to global heating, quote, sufficient to melt the ice cap and submerge New York. And that is as documented by, again, The Guardian. All right. This was a piece where they talked about physicist Edward Teller. All right. So, you know, in 1959, Edward Teller warned the oil industry about global warming. Okay, it's right there. You can't miss it. So they knew this was going on back in 1959. And the knowledge grew, and according to this article, in 1979, there was, quote, an internal Exxon study warned of dramatic environmental effects before 2050. By the late 1970s, a former Exxon scientist recently recalled global warming was no longer speculative, end quote. And again, that Exxon scientist, this was reported in 2015 by the Dallas Morning News. And the scientist's name was, let me scroll down here. So let me open it up here. That's the other thing. Nope, it's not going to let me do it. All right. But you can look at it yourself. Okay? So they knew. So what was their solution to, quote, reposition global warming as theory, not fact, end quote. Sound a lot like the tobacco industry, doesn't it? I remember, I was born in 1959. I remember when I was a little kid, my dad was stressing, his blood pressure was up, and this was the early 60s, and what did the doctor prescribe? He should smoke a pipe to help him relax. Still tobacco. So here we go. In 1991, and I'm reading straight from this article again from The Guardian, quote, in 1991, Informed Citizens for the Environment, a front group of coal and utility companies announced that, quote, doomsday is canceled, and asked, who told you the earth was warming, Chicken Little? They complained about weak evidence, non-existent proof, inaccurate climate models, and asserted that the physics was open to debate, end quote. And I'm looking at the ad right now. You know what? I remember seeing this ad. That is really something. And the truth behind the ad, quote, Instead of warning the public about global heating or taking action, fossil fuel companies stayed silent as long as they could. In the late 1980s, however, the world woke up to the climate crisis, marking what Exxon called a critical event. The fossil fuel industry's PR apparatus swung into action, implementing a strategy straight out of Big Tobacco's playbook to weaponize science against itself, end quote. See what's happening here? You know, the problem is, even though professional people like scientists and lawyers, whatever, there are going to be plenty that are perfectly honest, but all it takes is a handful of professionals, a handful of scientists, a handful of attorneys, a handful of medical doctors, a handful of engineers that are willing to bastardize their professional duties and lie for enough money. Okay, so there was a 1991 memo that they actually referenced that they found in climatefiles.com. And this 1991 memo was again by Informed Citizens for the Environment, and that their strategy was explicitly stated, and it said the following, quote, reposition global warming as theory, not fact, end quote. This goes on to do more. They say emphasize the uncertainty. Again, I'm reading straight from this piece. Quote, Mobil and ExxonMobil ran one of the most comprehensive climate denial campaigns of all time, with a foray in the 1980s, a blitz in the 1990s, and continued messaging through the late 2000s. Their climate advertorials, advertisements disguised as editorials, appeared in the op-ed page of the New York Times and other newspapers and were part of what scholars have called the longest regular weekly use of media to influence public and elite opinion in contemporary America, end quote. This is where I get really ticked off. There should not be a blending of entertainment and news. There just shouldn't. News should be serious. And this advertorial, the minute the actual profit motive is added into it, it cannot be trusted. That's it. There's a conflict of interest. You know, science must remain impartial based on reason and facts and study. All right. And even if, let's say for argument's sake that this were true and it was uncertain, wouldn't it be prudent and more importantly, wouldn't it be moral to basically lean on the side of caution to prevent a global catastrophe than to say, well, we're not sure, so we're going to keep just destroying the planet as best we can. Okay? Again, ethics count. They just do. And so there's all these different little things. Here's one ad here. I've got to get my magnifier because it's hard to see. Lies they tell our children. Okay? And this is an advertorial, you know, where they push this little girl saying, I don't have a future. And I'm just reading straight from it. Quote, with tears streaming down her face, a 13-year-old girl made this bleak assessment to her father. To back up her pessimism, she had brought home from school a mimeograph sheet listing the horrors that awaited her generation the next 25 years, worldwide, family. It goes on and on and on. Okay? So moved by, and it goes on to say, moved by the girl's misery, her father, Herbert I. London of the Hudson Institute and New York University, wrote a book, Why Are They Lying to Our Children? Now, they go on to talk about Professor London. What you have to understand is the Hudson Institute is one of those front groups. Okay? The Hudson Institute is basically paid for by billionaire cash. It is a front group. It is propaganda. The fact that NYU would put up with this is beyond belief. Okay? And again, at the bottom of this advertorial, it says Mobil. Damning, isn't it? Here's another advertorial from Mobil, Apocalypse No, all right? So this ad goes on, this article goes on to explain that between like 1996 and 98, Mobil ran 12 advertorials, and they were timed, you know, it just, they were sandwiched. Basically, let me start again. Between 96 and 98, Mobil ran 12 advertorials, keep in mind the timing was really suspicious because the UN Kyoto negotiations on climate change, 1997, right, sandwiched right in between. And so they're questioning whether the climate crisis is real and human-made. The idea is to de-set it, to downplay the seriousness of it. One ad suggested, quote, reset the alarm. Let's not rush to a decision at Kyoto. We still don't know what role man-made greenhouse gases might play in warming the planet, end quote. This is so stupid. But, you know, if you're as old as I am, you know, I remember we got more climate, when the price of gas went up, anybody who could went to a small gas-efficient car. That's when Toyota took over the market. And we were worried about it. And then this stuff started happening. And then you saw in the 90s the return of these SUVs, these big gas guzzlers. Like, none of this ever mattered. This type of, I'm not even going to call it misinformation, this type of lying, this premeditated campaign of lies has cost lives already, and it will cost us the planet unless we change our ways. You know, here's another one by Mobile, science, what we know and don't know. You know, this is really horrible. Unsettled science, Mobile. Okay, again, from the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal. Okay, why are these newspapers accepting these advertorials? That's my question. These advertorials wouldn't have gained traction if the New York Times and Wall Street Journal had actually behaved ethically and refused to air them. So the truth behind the ads, again, quote, Exxon's position, instructed internal strategy memos from 1988 to 89, was to extend the science and emphasize the uncertainty in scientific conclusions about the climate crisis. End quote. There was also a 1998 action plan by Exxon, Chevron, API, and utilities companies, and it declared, quote, victory will be achieved when average citizens in the media understand, recognize uncertainties in climate science, end quote. ExxonMobil kept funding climate denial through at least 2018. And it goes on to say, quote, one of their 2004 advertorials claimed scientific uncertainties precluded determinations regarding the human role in recent climate change, end quote. And this paper called it out saying, no, it's not true. It goes on to say, quote, 9 years earlier, the UN's Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change had concluded a discernible human influence on global climate, end quote. And, you know, it also adds that ExxonMobil's chief climate scientist was a contributing author to the report to the UN's Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. Okay, so not only did they lie, they got caught in their lies, and then they keep lying. You know, it turns out that Trump isn't the only one that tells stupid lies. Ongoing. Another tactic the industry uses, economic scaremongering. So there was a front group for the utility oil, coal mining, railroad, and car companies that ran a 1997 ad targeted at Kyoto negotiations titled, quote, don't risk our economic future, and end quote. And this was part of a $13 million campaign. And that campaign was so successful that the White House told Global Climate Coalition that President Bush, quote, rejected Kyoto in part because based on input from you. Okay? And that is documented by Climate Files. Okay? Here's another ad from Global Climate Coalition. You see this picture of, if I had video, I could show you the picture. These kids, they all look like they're about 7, 8 years old, bunch of little boys. And there, you know, there's a couple of African-American children, a Hispanic child, an Asian child, a white child, you know, just looking very politically correct and diverse. And they're all smiling and grinning. They're at summer camp having fun. And what does it say? Quote, Americans work hard for what we have, Mr. President. Don't risk our economic future. And that was in 1997. So that was basically addressing the Clinton administration. And then the ad, I've used my magnifier here, says, quote, I can barely see it, generations of American families have worked hard to make America's economy the strongest in the world, but that success and the economic security of our future generations is suddenly a great risk because right now countries like China, India, Mexico, and Brazil are pressuring the United States to support a UN global climate agreement that would force American families to restrict our use of the oil, gasoline, electricity that heats and cooks our homes and schools, gets us to our jobs, and runs our factories and businesses. What we have to pay for more for energy, and in turn, prices for goods and services would rise. The big countries that compete with America for jobs, trade, and economic security have everything to gain and nothing to lose, because according to a prior agreement, they won't have to make the sacrifices Americans are expected to make. This also means America's sacrifices will not produce environmental gains. That simply isn't fair or effective. The climate agreement that President Clinton is under pressure to sign has a big price tag. I can barely see this. Mostly for American families, it is a bad deal for America today and tomorrow. And that's from the Global Climate Coalition. This is a really dirty ad. Okay, I'm just going to call on and say it. And, you know, this probably is one of the worst ones, because I know a lot of people that buy into this. They just do. And the fact is, developing nations at the time, like India back in 97, and China wasn't like robust like it is now, what right do we have to tell them they have to cut their consumption when we're not going to cut ours? Because honestly, we're one of the biggest users of, you know, petroleum products. China is too, but I'm just saying, this is really dirty. So the truth behind the ad, it puts emphasis on cost, political realities, quote, instructed a 1989 Exxon strategy memo. It goes on to say, quote, just as the fossil fuel industry funded contrarian scientists to deny climate science, it also touted the flawed economic analysis of industry-funded economists. Okay. This goes on to say, quote, the best predictors of fossil fuel industry ad spending are media scrutiny and political activity. Today, economic scaremongering has gone digital with huge spikes in television and social media ad spending by oil lobbies each time climate regulations loom. In the run-up to the 2018-2020 U.S. midterm and presidential elections, ExxonMobil spent more on political advertising on Facebook and Instagram than any other country in the world except Facebook itself, end quote. So another one of the strategies they use is the, it's not our fault, it's yours, okay? And so from 04 to 06, there was this $100 million or more, okay, let me start again. Between 04 and 06, there was $100 million plus a year BP marketing campaign that was pushed. And this campaign, quote, introduced the idea of a carbon footprint before it was a common buzzword, end quote. And that was according to the PR agent in charge of the campaign. The targets of this campaign were the routine human activities and lifestyle choices of individuals and the average American household. In 2019, BP ran a Know Your Carbon Footprint campaign on social media. And again, they listed the documents. You can click on it yourself. This is the idea that, you know, it's shaming people like you or I to, you know, what, drive less? I don't know. But how do you get to your job, especially if you live in a town that doesn't have much mass transit or dependable mass transit? And the fact is, it's not so – individual cars cause a lot of problems. We do need great mass transit in this country. That would help a great deal. But, you know, for every million of us, all it takes is one rich person with a private jet to erase any of these savings. Nobody needs a private jet. That's nonsense. All right, but that's what they're doing. All right, and this also tears at people reduce your carbon footprint. So the truth behind these ads, quote, big oil's rhetoric has evolved from outright denial to more subtle forms of propaganda, including shifting responsibility away from companies and onto consumers. This mimics big tobacco's effort to combat criticism and defend against litigation and regulation by casting itself as kind of neutral, innocent, buffeted by the force of consumer demand, end quote. All right? In other words, it's not our fault that we lied about tobacco causing cancer. It's your fault that you decided to keep smoking. So this is what the oil industry is doing. And then, of course, we have greenwashing, where this article calls it greenwashing. Talk clean, act dirty. Okay? So in 07, Chevron issued the following quote. Quote, we're partnering with major universities to develop the next generation of biofuels. And that was a top talking point of BP, ExxonMobil, and others. And, you know, this was as documented by Uploads. What is this called? uploads.guim.co.uk. Okay. All righty. And so they've got something that looks like a study. It's kind of funny. In the New Yorker. Okay. And then you've got, and that was 07. It goes on to say, quote, ExxonMobil has been trumpeting its research into algae biofuels for more than a decade, from black and white print ads in 09 to digital commercials 2018 to 21. Okay. And you can see, like, I see one of the ads right now. You see this really pretty shade of green and these little green bubbles. And it's tiny green and could be the future of biofuels. Okay, it's like before when they tried to push corn as a biofuel. All right, so you're going to wear out the soil, basically producing corn and soybeans to turn into fuel. It's stupid. But the truth behind the ads, quote, greenwashing confers companies with an aura of environmental credibility while distracting from their anti-science, anti-clean energy, disinformation, lobbying, and investments. The goal is to defend what BP calls a company's social license to operate. I'm just reading from this again. Quote, one way fossil fuel companies give themselves a green shield is to establish, then boast about, what a 1999 API strategy memo termed cooperative relationship with reputable academic institutions, end quote. The API is the American Petroleum Institute, by the way. It goes on to say, quote, big oil's colonization of academia is pervasive. Shell's ongoing sponsorship of the London Science Museum's climate exhibition comes with a gagging clause prohibiting the museum from discrediting the company's reputation. And the colonization of academia is as documented by another article from The Guardian. The title is The Fossil Fuel Industry's Invisible Colonization of Academia. And you see it says corporate capture of academic research by the fossil fuel industry is an elephant in the room and a threat to tackling climate change. No shock there. You know, every time I see a university and they've named a department after some corporation, I want to scream. I just do. Okay, this goes on to say, quote, as for algae, America's five largest oil and gas companies spent $3.6 billion, with a B, on corporate reputation advertising between 1986 and 2015. ExxonMobil has spent more on advertising than on algae research. And that is documented by the Wall Street Journal, hardly a bastion of wild liberals. We got more. There is the quote, we're part of the solution scheme. This is BP, okay? They kind of developed this, what they call all the above strategy. This is for marketing energy, and this is between 06 and 08. And Big Oil continues to promote this narrative, the idea of fossil fuel solutionism. That's what they call it. And includes, quote, all of the above language on social media, in Congress, and in paid-for pretend editorials in the Washington Post. Okay. Goes on to say, quote, to make this spin stick, fossil fuel companies have been calling methane clean. Oh, my God. Since at least 1980s, natural gas is already clean, said API Facebook ads and billboards last year, end quote. First of all, methane's anything but clean. All right? Methane is so much worse than the previous carbon. It's not even funny. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. This is crazy. And again, the Washington Post. Do you see a pattern here? New York Times, The New Yorker, The Washington Post, The Wall Street Journal, all supposedly reputable newspapers, and they're printing these fake editorials. Outrageous. Absolutely outrageous. And you know, and they pay for it. It's not an editorial. You send an editorial and like most of what I write, okay, I publish right now in Nation of Change and Eurasia Review and a few others. And because, you know, I do have a bias and I'm open about it because I believe I'm doing muckraking. But again, I heavily document all my stuff is called an op-ed or an editorial. I don't pay to get my stuff published. See, these companies, they're paying these groups to publish their advertorials. That's and they're not just telling lies, they're telling incredibly stupid lies. There's nothing clean about methane at all. You know, and again, to trust anything comes from the API, the American Petroleum Institute. They are lobbyists. Good God. So you see this ad, and it's like a multiple guess, like we used to do on a multiple guess test, A through F. And you've got oil, natural gas, wind, solar, biofuels, and all of the above. And F is check, BP, Beyond Petroleum. You know, remember that's when they changed their name from British Petroleum, still BP, to Beyond Petroleum. It's still killing the planet, Chica. Good God. I just, you know, I used to hear kids give you the stupid excuse of the dog ate my homework, but this is beyond belief. So the truth behind the ads from the API, again, there's one here in the Washington Post in 2021, quote, in contradiction to the science of stopping global heating, big oil asserts that fossil fuels will be essential for the foreseeable future. The all-of-the-above energy mantra was, as BP's advertising creative put it, quote, co-opted by politicians in 08 and became a centerpiece of the Obama administration's energy policies. The campaign also positioned methane as a clean bridge fuel. Like clean coal, calling methane clean, cleanest, or low carbon has been deemed false advertising by regulators. And that is, again, as documented in another article by The Guardian titled Shell and Exxon Face Censure Over Claim Gas Was Cleanest Fossil Fuel. Dutch advertising watchdog's ruling prompts company to change line to least polluting fossil fuel as campaigners welcome action over misleading ad. Okay, so just when you thought, well, this is all the Republicans, it isn't all the Republicans, okay? The Obama administration was also in it up to their eyeballs. They just were. You got to tell the truth. Another tactic, distorting reality in the 2020s and beyond. So you've got the Shell TV ad that ran, let's see, this article was published in 21, so it ran in 20. And it featured, according to this, featured, quote, birds in the sky, fields of wind and solar farms. The CEO of a Shell renewable subsidiary saying she's, quote, made the future far cleaner and far better for our children, end quote, and not one reference to fossil fuels. Wow. That level of propaganda is worthy of the Nazi Goebbels. I'm just going to say it right now. Now, the truth behind the ad, between 2010 and 2018, it says here that, quote, 98.7% of Shell's investments were in oil and gas. Such misrepresentations are industry-wide, according to the greenwashing files, as documented in the greenwashing files by ClientEarth.org. You can read it yourself. So we're just inundated with all these garbage ads. They are lies. Okay, they just are. All right. Okay. Looks like I did this twice. I did not mean to. So, this is what we're dealing with here, folks. It's outrageous. And I know that I get very worked up on this, but it's outrageous. I mean, you just can't even go on with this. All right. So, right now, we're going to get ready for our second story. I'm going to try a new sound effect. I don't know if it's going to work or not. Here we go. Here we go. Okay. Trying something new today. All right. We're going to go back to my intro, and I'm going to be back in a minute. Okay, and we're back. So, you got a little dose of the corporations that push climate lies and are killing the planet. And these lies are beyond stupid. And yet they get away with it. The only way we're going to save this planet, in my opinion, is to call out these people. And unfortunately, that's going to be a little bit more difficult. The next story deals with the right to protest. Now, I'm going to tell you right now, I'm actually working on a story now that's going to cover more than just this recent decision. So story number two deals with protest, and it's based on a recent, when I say SCOTUS, SCOTUS stands for the Supreme Court of the United States. So the Supreme Court, just this week, refused to hear the case of Doe v. McKesson. And Doe v. McKesson is, Doe is a police officer that goes unnamed, all right? And there was a protest led by DeRay McKesson, and who is one of the organizers, you know, he's well known in Black Lives Matter and all that. And, you know, DeRay's been an activist for a long time. Anyway, this was, I believe, after the police murder, the police assassination of Alton Sterling. So DeRay McKesson organized this protest inside the police department. And again, some moron threw like a rock or something. It injured a cop. The cop sued. And what's happening now is this went to, on appeals, it went to the Fifth Circuit Court, which is filled with Republican appointees. And the judge who decided this, Judge Jennifer Elrod, decided that protest organizers can be held liable for the actions of anyone present in the scene. And the ramifications are dire. That means that, let's say, Black Lives Matter or, you know, the Anti-Defamation League, they hold a peaceful protest and a couple of KKKers or neo-Nazis show up. They do something violent. The organizers, peaceful organizers, are the ones that are going to be held accountable. This is a way to silence dissent, to silence protest. And it's very relevant to the first story about, you know, how, climate lies. How are we going to force the politicians to do the right thing? Well, one of the tools you use is protest. But how many people are going to want to protest if they are worried that not only they'll get sued and lose every their home, lose everything else, but they could also be criminally charged as well for someone else's actions that they had nothing to do with? That's not even decent rule of law, and we're going to talk about it in a minute. And, you know, one little aside, Judge Jennifer Elrod, you'll never guess this. Yes, she's with associated with the Federalist Society, shock. She is an alumnus of the Harvard Law School. You would think they teach you better at the Harvard Law School or any school that goes the. Why do they have to have the article the in front of it? Could they be any more, you know, any more arrogant? But I guess they could. So let's go on with this next story. Okay. So I've got a piece here, and this was written by Ian Millhiser, who, you know, does great legal journalism. Millhiser is a senior, this is from Vox. Vox is another really good publication. Millhiser is a senior correspondent of Vox, and he really focuses on the Supreme Court and the Constitution, as well as the decline of liberal democracy in the U.S. His professional credentials, he has a JD, in other words, a law degree from Duke University, and he's also authored two books on the Supreme Court. Now, he's done two pieces on here. He did an earlier piece on the Fifth Circuit's attack of the First Amendment. Keep in mind, the First Amendment isn't just free speech. It's free speech, free press, the right to peaceful assembly, and for redress of grievances, okay? This is a direct attack. So this piece here, Supreme Court, it's titled, "The Supreme Court Effectively Abolishes the Right to Mass Protest in Three U.S. States. It is no longer safe to organize a protest in Louisiana, Mississippi, or Texas." So this is an instance where these three states, they did their states' rights garbage, and they passed laws that effectively pretty much outlaw protest. No shock that it's in the Deep South. Okay? But I could see them doing it in Missouri as well as Florida. They haven't already. They're on their way. So just this past Monday, this went from the Fifth Circuit, and Judge Jennifer Elrod made this asinine decision. They got appealed to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court just said, no, we're not going to hear McKesson v. Doe. Now, not a big deal, right? Well, it is a big deal, because when the Supreme Court decided not to hear McKesson, it left in place the lower court decision by the Fifth Circuit. Okay? Now, under that lower court decision, quote, "A protest organizer faces potentially ruinous financial consequences if a single attendee at a mass protest commits an illegal act," end quote. Okay? Now, our basic system, our basic justice system, flawed as it is, basically says that you're responsible for your own actions. All right? This is such a stupid judgment, I can't believe it. But the Fifth Circuit basically has, according to Millhiser, engaged in a crusade against DeRay McKesson. Okay? Now, as I said before, the facts of the McKesson case, DeRay helped organize a protest in Baton Rouge right after the fatal police shooting of Alton Sterling. Call it what it is. It was the police assassination of Alton Sterling. Now, protest is going on. It was outside the police department. Some individual, they don't know who, threw a rock or some sort of object at a police officer. And the police officer is the plaintiff in the McKesson case. And he's only identified as Officer John Doe. I have a problem with this. If they're suing DeRay McKesson, Mr. McKesson has a right to know who's suing him. Who's making this claim? This Officer John Doe crap, it should have been kicked out of court. They should identify the officer. And, of course, the officer was, you know, hurt. He was, apparently his object hit him in the face, and according to one court, suffered, quote, injuries to his teeth, jaw, brain, and head. And, again, I feel bad about that. But everyone at the scene, both the police and the protesters, have agreed that McKesson wasn't the one that threw the rock. Now, this seems simple enough, right? You're responsible for your own actions, not for some jackass that decides to do something illegal. And it was backed up by earlier Supreme Court precedent. There was an earlier case from 1982, NAACP v. Claiborne Hardware. And this decision said that, quote, that protest leaders cannot be held liable for the violent actions of a protest participant absent unusual circumstances that are not present in the McKesson case, such as if McKesson had authorized, directed, or ratified the decision to throw the rock, end quote, which McKesson didn't do. In fact, Judge Sotomayor did give a brief opinion that she attached to the court's decision not to hear McKesson. And, you know, she pointed out that, quote, the court recently reaffirmed the strong First Amendment protections enjoyed by people like McKesson in Counterman v. Colorado in 2023. Now, it goes on to say, quote, that decision held that the First Amendment precludes punishment for inciting violent action unless, quote, unless the speaker's words were intended, not just likely, to produce imminent disorder, end quote. So the law is pretty clear. The precedent was on McKesson's side. The reason Claiborne protects protest organizers is obvious. Because without that, you organize a peaceful protest. Let's say there's 1,000 people that show up. 999 are peaceful and polite. All it takes is one jackass to do something wrong. And you can't control everyone else's actions. That would be like trying to control the reactions of the fans of the losing team at the Super Bowl. It's crazy. And the Fifth Circuit is loaded with crazy conservatives. Another conservative, Judge Don Willett, on the Fifth Circuit, dissented from the court's McKesson decision. And he warned in one of his dissents, quote, his court's decision would make protest organizers liable for the unlawful acts of counter-protesters and agitators, end quote. And it goes on to say, quote, so under the Fifth Circuit's rule, a Ku Klux Klansman could sabotage the Black Lives Matter movement simply by showing up at its protests and throwing stones, okay? Now, one criticism of Ian Millhiser on this one is he mentions Judge Willett, doesn't mention the judge that made this decision, which was Judge Jennifer Elrod. So the decision by the Fifth Circuit is obviously wrong. It just is. Okay? The precedent is against them. So for instance, in the NAACP case, okay, excuse me, the Claiborne case, they explain a little bit here. It was the mid-60s. The NAACP had this boycott of white merchants in Claiborne County, Mississippi. Excuse me. Now, according to the state Supreme Court, the Mississippi State Supreme Court at that time, there were some participants in the boycott who, quote, engaged in acts of physical force and violence against the persons and property of certain customers and prospective customers, end quote, of these white businesses. And it goes on to say that one of the organizers of the boycott did more to encourage violence than McKesson ever did. Charles Evers was a local NAACP leader, and allegedly he gave this speech to boycott supporters where he said, quote, if we catch any of you going in any of them racist stores, we're going to break your damn neck, end quote. Again, it's an allegation. Again, and once again, D. Ray McKesson did none of this. But the Supreme Court back then held that this, what they called emotionally charged rhetoric, quote, did not transcend the bounds of protected speech, end quote. So instead, it ruled that the courts have to use extreme care before they decide or impose liability on a political figure of any kind, which not only protects D. Ray McKesson, theoretically, I guess it would protect Donald Trump as well to some degree, except Donald Trump really was inciting. D. Ray McKesson wasn't. And just for the record, I've met D. Ray McKesson several years ago. I really don't like the man. And I don't like him because before he was involved in Black Lives Matter, he was a Teach for America principal who, you know, was really nasty to kids and teachers. But that's another story. But you got to tell the truth. The reason why I'm relaying this. So apparently, because of the Claiborne decision, there were three separate theories that might justify holding Evers liable for the unlawful conduct of others. First is, quote, a finding that he authorized, directed, or ratified specific tortious, in other words, activity you could sue for, would justify holding him responsible for the consequences of that activity. Second, quote, a finding that his public speeches were likely to incite lawless action could justify holding him liable for unlawful conduct that in fact followed within a reasonable period. And third, the speeches might be taken as evidence that Evers gave other specific instructions to carry out violent acts or threats, end quote. Okay, so it would have to meet those conditions, and D. Ray McKesson violated none of this. He just didn't. Okay, you got to tell the truth. In fact, according to this article, the Fifth Circuit conceded in 2019 in the opinion that Officer Doe, quote, has not pled facts that would allow a jury to conclude that McKesson colluded with the unknown assailant to attack Officer Doe, knew of the attack and ratified it, or agreed with other named persons that attacking the police was one of the goals of the demonstration, end quote. And according to Heiser, that should have been the end of the case. But Judge Jennifer Elrod decided that she alone had the right to make up extra stuff. Okay? And so what she did was, and again, they don't mention her, but she's the judge that did this. The Fifth Circuit, quote, concluded that Claiborne's three separate theories that might justify holding a protest leader liable are a non-exhaustive list, and that the MAGA-infused court is allowed to create new exceptions to the First Amendment. It then ruled that the First Amendment does not apply. Let me read that again. It was a little, let me back up here. So we talked about the Claiborne decision, but the most recent opinion in the case, the opinion crafted by Judge Jennifer Elrod, who's not mentioned in this article. Quote, the Fifth Circuit concluded that Claiborne's three separate theories that might justify holding a protest leader liable are, one, a non-exhaustive list, and that the MAGA-infused court is allowed to create new exceptions to the First Amendment. It then ruled that the First Amendment does not apply. It then ruled that the First Amendment does not apply, quote, where a defendant creates unreasonably dangerous conditions and where his creation of those conditions causes a plaintiff to sustain injuries. So Judge Elrod made up this stuff. She decided that the theories in the Claiborne precedent, you know, that might justify, are there a non-exhaustive list, meaning they can come up with more reasons to hold a protest leader liable. She also decided that she could create new exceptions to the First Amendment. And then she also decided that the First Amendment does not apply, quote, where a defendant creates unreasonably dangerous conditions and where his creation of those conditions causes a plaintiff to sustain injuries, end quote. So what were the unreasonably dangerous conditions that DeRay McKesson created in Baton Rouge? Well, the Fifth Circuit decided that because McKesson organized, quote, the protest to begin in front of the police station, obstructing access to the building. Yeah, so they also faulted McKesson because he failed to dissuade protesters who allegedly stole water bottles from a grocery store and for leading the assembled protest onto a public highway in violation of Louisiana criminal law. Okay. These were supposedly adults. DeRay McKesson is not their mommy. All right? But true danger here is that the Fifth Circuit judge, Jennifer Elrod, decided that she alone could attack the First Amendment, especially the part about peaceable protest. Peaceful protest. Okay? That's it. And it's outrageous. Make no mistake about it. You got to wonder about these people. You just do. All right. So right now we're going to go back to our dramatic organ and, no, we're not. We're just going to go back to intro and we're going to get ready. We have a twofer in terms of a Jackass of the Week award and somebody added to his deplorables list, and frankly, it's the same guy. Here we go. And we're back. Okay. So what I'm going to do here, our Jackass of the Week and our Deplorable. So I'm going to play two different kinds of music. So first, our Jackass. Give me a second here. Welcome to EJR's Jackass of the Week Award. We have a very special Jackass this week. He's even in public office. Oh, never sounded better. Rayon. Should have a music group. Okay. So, and then we have our evil sound effect as well because of our deplorable. It's a twofer. And for our deplorables list, same guy, Missouri Attorney General Andrew Bailey. Okay, let's move on. So by now you've probably heard that in Texas, the criminal attorney, the Attorney General of Texas, Ken Paxton, who ironically has been under indictment himself, he finally got out from under, he filed a lawsuit to help out poor little Elon Musk because Media Matters outed Musk leadership on X, where basically these ads by major corporate sponsors were placed right next to posts by white supremacists and neo-Nazis. And this stuff was really toxic. And there wasn't any guesswork. Well, you know, Texas is bad enough, but here in Missouri, after Ken Paxton did it, our Attorney General, Andrew Bailey, also sued Media Matters. He copycatted. So this is a piece that ran both in Nation of Change and Eurasia Review, and I wrote it. The headline is Missouri Republican Attorney General Bailey sues Media Matters using consumer law to censor the press. And actually, we have enough time. I could read it. So here we go. Missouri Attorney General Andrew Bailey is sponsoring an asinine crusade allegedly against consumer fraud while claiming to champion the free speech rights of selective billionaires, Elon Musk, and associated white supremacists and Nazi sympathizers. Bailey is suing progressive journalistic watchdog group Media Matters as he seeks to defend social media outlet Twitter, now renamed as X. Bailey objects to the group pursuing what he calls an activist agenda against X. The lawsuit accuses Media Matters of, quote, activism, algorithm manipulation, and consumer fraud. One last thing, Media Matters is a journalistic think tank and a nonprofit. This lawsuit is selective and prejudicial, with the Missouri AG abusing the power of his office. Bailey unilaterally decided to attack Media Matters, alleging they committed consumer fraud, while he ignored actual systemic consumer fraud being committed by payday lenders in Missouri. It should be noted that Bailey later accepted campaign contributions from those same lenders. While the mere appearance of impropriety is not a criminal offense, it does compromise his credibility. Furthermore, though political bribery has been made technically legal by the Supreme Court, it does not mean those Pauls accepting legal bribes are either ethical or honest. So why is the Missouri Attorney General pushing a frivolous lawsuit against journalists while he ignores actual fraud in his state? What is Bailey's true motive? Is this suit a sneak attack on free press rights guaranteed by the First Amendment? Is this a case of political contrivance engineered to further Bailey's rise in another Trump administration? Is this a government-sponsored version of a slap suit meant to silence dissent? How did the state of Missouri become embroiled in an effort to defend billionaire Elon Musk? And then I go into the history of the lawsuit. Okay. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but after Paxton's lawsuit, the Missouri Attorney General Bailey copycatted Ken Paxton of Texas. And he sent this civil investigative demand letter to Media Matters. A CID letter is a direct demand for massive documentation that the Attorney General sent to be used against, in this case, Media Matters. And so Bailey's notice of investigation specifically alleged that Media Matters, quote, falsely and deceptively manipulated the algorithm on X, formerly known as Twitter, through coordinated inauthentic behavior, and that you did so in an attempt to defame the organization and cause advertisers to pull their support from the platform, thus harming free speech, end quote. Okay. There's so many wrong things with that statement, it's not even funny. Apparently logic evades Mr. Bailey. But this idea that they manipulated the algorithm, all right? Now, previously that might have required access to private proprietary information such as, you know, the algorithm formula, and a small outlet like Media Matters wouldn't possess that. Now, it should be noted that if Mr. Bailey is implying that Media Matters stole the formula for the algorithm, it couldn't have happened because Twitter actually released the source code for its recommender algorithm that back in March of 23. So there's no theft issue as the code was freely offered to the public. And manipulating a social media algorithm is not a crime. And then Bailey accused Media Matters of lying to the public, and yada, yada, yada. Let's go to the ludicrous algorithm manipulation claims, because this is the thing nobody else talked about. And I just knew it sounded weird. You know, I even asked a few friends of mine that are in the IT industry if this is possible, and they kind of went, ugh. So the ludicrous algorithm manipulation claims, I'm reading straight from my article. The alleged manipulation of a large social media algorithm by A.G. Bailey is virtually impossible. Mark Cheong is a senior lecturer of information systems in the School of Computing and Information Systems at the Melbourne Law School. The University of Melbourne covered the subject in a piece published at The Conversation. To quote Cheong, quote, algorithms are typically black boxes that have their inner workings hidden. It's in the interest of tech companies to keep the recipe for their secret sauce, well, a secret. So the odds are against any algorithm manipulation bent to some journalist's will. Cheong also explained that, quote, even when an algorithm's code is revealed to the public, such as when Twitter released the source code for its recommender algorithm in March, it's not enough to bend them to one's will, end quote. Cheong added that, quote, between the sheer complexity of the code, constant tweaks by developers, and the presence of arbitrary design choices, such as explicitly tracking Elon Musk's tweets, any claims of being able to perfectly game an algorithm should be taken with a pinch of salt, end quote. In fact, if Missouri AG Bailey is implying, this is me talking now, that Media Matters somehow illegally obtained algorithm code for X, he would be looking at a possible contempt charge, again, as Twitter released the source code for its recommendation algorithm in March of 2023. So once again, there is no conceivable crime here other than prosecutorial abuse of office. Now, he accused Media Matters of fraud against the Missouri Merchandising Practices Act. And so I found information from lawyers about that act. And, you know, I said it's unclear what merchandise Media Matters was selling. It's more unclear who the actual plaintiff is. Since A.G. Bailey represents the state of Missouri, then Missouri should be the plaintiff. So what tangible loss did Missouri suffer? Now, Bailey wrongfully claims that Missourians suffered a loss of free speech rights due to the monetary losses X absorbed in the past few years. There is no tangible evidence proving his contention. Bailey also implies that X is the sole social media platform available to Missourians. I can assure Mr. Bailey that many of us can easily live without X. And then he also forgot about there's some exceptions to the fraud law in Missouri. One is insurance companies. They're exempt, which is ironic given the fact that insurers are selling fraudulent and worthless Medicare Advantage plans, but they can't be held accountable. And the other exception is the owner of a publisher of a newspaper or radio station, in other words, journalists. So I contacted Bailey's office and his press secretary, communications director, whatever. Her name's Madeline Severin, and I posed some questions to her. And, you know, once again, she just lifted, you know, a comment from his website. And then when I pointed out the fact that, you know, Media Matters, it being journalists, should be exempt from the Missouri Merchandising Practices Act prosecution, a potential prosecution, she said that, well, Media Matters is a nonprofit, not a news organization. Apparently, Ms. Searin and Mr. Bailey failed to understand that, you know, two things can be true. So again, Mr. Bailey is a MAGA-style state attorney general. He has a record of selective prosecution. and other frivolous lawsuits, especially lawsuits that censor free speech and free press rights of MAGA opponents, while he ironically poses as this free speech warrior. You know, people laugh at hypocrisy like it's no big deal, but here's the deal. When you are that steeped in hypocrisy, that means that the truth doesn't matter to you. Seriously. Mr. Bailey was one of multiple Republican attorney generals that filed a previous lawsuit against Target. Apparently, those attorney generals, including Bailey, were offended by Target's sale of LGBTQ plus friendly merchandise. Now, I'm reading from my article, Target wasn't selling sex toys or how-to manuals. They were selling onesies, baby bibs, overalls, t-shirts sporting slogans such as girls, gays, theys, and swimsuits offering, quote, tuck-friendly construction for male genitalia. It goes on to say Bailey and the other AGs also objected to, quote, products with anti-Christian designs such as pentagrams, horn skulls, and other satanic products, including the phrase Satan respects pronouns, with a horn ram representing Baphomet, a half-human, half-animal hermaphrodite worshipped by the occult. Bailey, along with other Republican AGs involved in the suit, signed off on a threatening letter that cited various child protection and parental rights laws, which regulate, quote, the sale or distribution of obscene matter. Again, you know, it's amazing. You know, the letter goes on to say that it threatened Target support of an LGBTQ plus organization. And I wrote, quote, what Bailey forgot was the inconvenient fact that while some may find Target's merchandise insulting, it is protected under the First Amendment. Ironically, when Bailey sued Media Matters, he had no such concerns over the white supremacist and neo-Nazi content found on X. Now, Bailey's attacked journalists at Media Matters. He still claims he's a free speech media warrior and nonsense. So, you know, I basically poked holes in his claim, and then I ended this article. I had to just kind of thumb my nose at this horrible hypocrite the tail end of my article. And this is why Mr. Bailey is our jackass of the week, as well as added to our deplorables list. Quote, Mr. Bailey, you have declared open season on hunting bullies. I personally know of one specific bully intimately involved in multiple conflicts of interest, an individual so steeped in hypocrisy they use propaganda in spectacularly ham-handed ways in a desperate quest for power. This person has dedicated a personal crusade against the speech and press protection of the First Amendment. I can help you find this dastardly hypocrite. Just look in the mirror. Okay, and for those reasons and so much more, Andrew Bailey, as well as Andrew Bailey is not only added to our deplorables list, but our Jackass of the Week award. Okay. All righty. So now we're almost done with the show. We have a Randy Rainbow ditty. It is 6 years old. It still rings true. Randy Rainbow is talking all about Trump's base. And in this election season, it does ring true. So with no further ado, I will bring you Randy Rainbow. Give me a second, folks.
My fellow Americans. Because you know he's all about his face. No feelings. He's all about his face. No feelings. He's all about his face. No feelings. You only just his face. Just his face. Yeah, it's pretty clear who the schmuck is talking to, and I can guarantee it's not to me or you. Whatever happens, he's got just one response. That's what they say to get what he wants. Why he's still talking about all the travel plans? I know, it's hard to fathom, but he's still got lots of plans. If you ain't never seen one, connect the dots, because they're mostly white supremacists and Russian Twitter bots. You know Obama, he told me he loved me no matter what. Abraham Lincoln, he taught me don't settle for what you got. Why? Because you know we know what I
road up. He's all about his weight, and it's real destructive. He's all about his weight, and it's unproductive. He's all about his face, about his face. He's playing a stupid guy. He's an unmanageable maniac. He likes the dummies. He don't give a flag. Because there's a face. He'll believe whatever comes out of that shithole on his face. Michelle Obama said when we go low, that's when we go high. And if I get any higher, I'm scared of the to take credit for fixing the government.
We are making America great again.
The names of the country falling
to the
oh, Lord. It's no joke that the women's unemployment rate is the lowest in 17 years. It is no joke.
Kellyanne, isn't it true that FBI Director Chris Wray threatened to resign because Jeff Sessions pressured him to fire Deputy Director Andrew McCabe?
I would have no direct knowledge of that.
And isn't it also true that Donald Trump paid an adult film star hundreds of thousands of dollars in hush money after having an extramarital affair with her in 2006?
No, I have no direct knowledge of what you're saying.
Okay, well then I guess there's just one more thing and then I'll let you go. I know you're lying, because your lips are moving, popping up an interview. You know he's dumb, and you ain't fooling anyone except maybe at Fox News, because they, it seems to me, are easy to mislead and confuse.
Something. Next week, we're going to continue with EJR, otherwise known as the Environmental Justice Report, and we're going to be talking about a specific case that is finally going to make it, I believe, to the Supreme Court. I think they've accepted it. Juliana, let's see. It's the Juliana case, and basically, this is a case that was instituted by then a bunch of kids who claimed that their rights to a clean environment, a healthy environment, were being destroyed, and they're suing the government. The Juliana case is really an important case, and they are going after Dems and Republicans alike. Please tune in. It's important. Again, if you can't listen to the show at the time we air, because this is a live show, you know, occasionally I'll pre-record, but not usually. This is a live show. You can always go to Progressive News Network at Blog Talk Radio and find it there. I also post this on Facebook as well as X, ironically. Oh, Lord, my brain is fried today. Anyway, I hope you learned something. Look, we're all in this together. Make no mistake about it. And I can, you know, make light, because Randy Rainbow and similar parodies are always great fun. This election, no one can sit out. I understand if there are quite a few progressives and different groups that don't like Joe Biden. Regardless, Trump would be far worse. This election is whether or not even the most anemic semblance of a democracy survives. Because Trump and those bastards at the Federalist Society and the Heritage Foundation with their Project 2025, they intend to just create a police state. Make no mistake about it. So what you need to do right now, vote your conscience in the primaries. I don't care. But come forward and vote in the general election. Don't let anybody steal your vote. And please, vote against Republicans. Down the board. Send a clear message. The only reason these MAGA morons are getting bolder is because they're not facing any real punishment. If you have friends and family members that are MAGA, I'm sorry. I don't feel like being patient with these people anymore. You know, they're bigots. They know what they stand for. And it's time to say, you either become a decent human being and reject this type of bigotry, or we disown you. You're dead to us. That's it. Make no mistake about it. We don't have time to win these people over. And by the way, you're not going to win over MAGA. All right? You're just not. Voters that aren't inclined to vote, we need to win those over, them over. And we need to also make sure that the Secretary of State in each different state is actually following the law. You know, check your voter registration. This is not a joke. And it isn't just Donald Trump. All right? This is the Republican Party showing its true colors. Make no mistake about it. The attack on the middle class began with the Powell memo. Lewis Powell was a Republican corporate lawyer before he was appointed to the Supreme Court by President Nixon, another Republican. And the Powell memo was basically it was Project 2025 before there was a Project 2025. The Republicans decided there was too much democracy in the United States. And what, you mean people could actually have a decent standard of living? The rich are not our friends. Seriously. It doesn't matter. I don't care how much Jeff Bezos gives to charity. I think it was Dr. King that spoke about how charity may be nice, but what we really need to do is attack the actual systemic structures that cause the need for charity. So once again, you don't like Joe Biden. You don't like his policy on Israel versus the Palestinians. You don't like what he's done with environmental legislation, whatever. Right now, we have to make sure that the Republicans are defeated. Then we can go after the Democrats. You need to vote. Otherwise, this democracy will not survive. What little is left of it. It's time for people to put on their big boy and big girl pants and grow the F up already. Notice, I didn't say the F-bomb. Came close, didn't. Anyway, I hope you learned something. Again, next week, the Giuliani case on the Environmental Justice Report. Tune in. Like this this broadcast. Kind of bear with me. And with that, I say good night. And by whatever you believe in, bless us, because we're going to need it.